you doing?
Good. Is there any way I can get a list of the people?
The meeting of the Planning and Development Committee. Item number two on the agenda is approval of the minutes from the August 4th, 2020 meeting. Do I have a motion?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
None opposed? Motion passes. Item number three on the agenda is public comment. If you are here for public comment, just come forward to the podium. It'll be cleaned in between each speaker. You have 2 minutes and please state your name and address for the record. One at a time.
Hello, my name is Jonathan Woker. I'm here on applications 5A and 5B on your agenda, the annexation and rezoning for 509 Long Point Road. And just wanted to let you know that I'm here and would like to speak to the committee when you get to that point in the agenda to address some comments we have.
So you'll be available if we have questions to call you forward?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Jessica Miller. I live in Waterway Arms in the Old Village. We have a very serious issue on our hands as it comes to short-term rentals. We have 64 units. We are approximately 15% occupied by short-term rentals and growing every week. This creates a lot of traffic issues. So it creates a lot of domestic issues. We have had a fire that is connected to one of our townhomes. I've been here before, I've spoken about that. I've also spoken about the domestic terror group that we had check-in called Black Israelites. There was about 30 to 40 people in that house. It's connected to my building. Our peace is gone. I have lived in Waterway Arms for 6 years. I have seen this progression, and we are progressing in a very rapid pace down the wrong way. I have 2 children. Both go to Wando. One, thankfully, is going to College of Charleston. However, this is where I'm trying to raise my children. I cannot raise my children with a bachelorette party coming home at midnight, creating wild havoc. I cannot raise my children in a beautiful old village where domestic terrors can come at any time. I don't know what to do. We've spoken about this before. Prior to this, Mount Pleasant, we were told, would uphold our covenants. Our covenants say no businesses in our development. We were told once before that these covenants would hold strong and all business licenses were revoked. Some things happen in the background, unbeknownst to us. I have other neighbors here as well that are concerned, and those business licenses were allowed. We are getting overrun. I don't know how much I can tell you. If you look at our residential area globally, it is a very small, tight area. So you can imagine the impact is quite devastating. I'm not the only one who feels this way. I wish more of our neighbors were able to come because it is during a business day. Please understand. There's 2 other people here from my development, but there should be more. Everyone is very concerned. I don't know what else needs to happen. We've had a fire. That was tragic. That was in an Airbnb. There were 8 girls in that Airbnb, and it was caused by the electric being run. It was overused. The place next to them was also damaged severely. Guess what? They gutted it. Now it's another Airbnb. Same thing.
Thank you. Your time is up.
Thank you. Please help us.
My name's Owen Meislin, and I'm on the same topic as this young lady, Jessica. I own one of the Waterway Arms townhouses. I'd rather read this if I could. I'll forget to say too many things. Do we have 2 minutes? Is that what it is?
Yeah, your timer's ready. Could you state your address for the record, please?
The unit that I'm talking about, it's 703 Center Street. I don't live there. I own it. I'm a long-term landlord. I've owned it for about 30 years. 30 years. Okay, I'm a landlord of long-term rentals only. That's what I do now. I'm retired, but I own long-term rentals. I own one of the units of Waterway Arms. I would not be a short-term participant because it's an affront to a residential neighborhood. It reduces values and quality of life for neighbors. I believe short-term rentals are an attack on lower-priced housing, and they're also a deterioration of community. Waterway Arms is a moderately priced townhomes, with modest amenities. It was designed to be accessible to young families, first-time buyers, singles, empty nesters in later years. It says in the covenants, no businesses. And that's who live there, these long-term residents, young families. Predominantly, and it's predominantly owner-occupied. Some are long-term renters. That means it provides home and shelter. It's called affordable housing. We need more. The Homeowners Association helps keep general property values up. Of course, individual owners do also. Short-term rentals are like motel rooms, but without supervision. The owner may never see or speak to the guest. There are no staff members running around making sure the guests park in the right place or don't overcrowd or don't trash or bother neighbors. Only the police can you call for disturbances.
So your time is up.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, but I was coming up to say hello in the beginning. 1 minute, 30 seconds.
I'm so sorry, sir. It's a two-minute speak to speak.
It was the best part, too.
Good afternoon. My name is Leanne Anier, and I'm also living in Waterway Arms subdivision. I have owned my place for 22 years and have never rented it out. I first want to talk a little bit about the fact that even though it has been addressed with the planning and development of the short-term rental applications, they were originally denied, upholding our covenants. Then the people running them, hired attorneys, also people on our board, came and they sent emails and were asking for this to be reversed. And that's exactly what the town of Mount Pleasant did. They reversed these applications and then approved them within a short period of time. The email that was sent by our previous president, as well as two letters by one of the board's attorneys that he hired, they all say the same thing in the sense of, it says, the association has never considered this language in its declaration to prohibit short-term rentals. We are the association. None of us knew about this. This was all done behind our back. Nothing was said. Then it got reversed. Again, none of us living in the community knew about this. None of these people running them live in our community. Some of them even live out of state. Nobody monitors these people. We have to police our own area the best we can. When I call the police, there's been times when the police officers, they honestly either feel that their hands are tied or they don't want to deal with it. I've had trespassing all over my property. I've had to buy expensive cameras at the suggestion of the police department. These cameras pick up people trespassing all over my property. I've got trash in the front, trash thrown in the back, using my recycling bin to throw their old McDonald's food into it. And I am stressed out over this. This is causing me a ton of stress and a ton of anxiety. And I shouldn't have to go through this, and neither should any of the other people in my neighborhood. And it's because our covenants weren't upheld.
Thank you. Your time is up.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else here to speak?
Good afternoon. My name's Richard Horn. I live in Oak Park subdivision off of Long Point Road. I've been in communication with the POA, HOA presidents at our subdivision, Oak Park, as well as Hidden Cove and Hobcock Creek, and specifically addressing agenda item 7A, I believe, on your agenda, dealing with a speedway that is wanting to be developed right across the street from our front entrance. Is my understanding, it's the understanding of the POA presidents that this issue has been resolved and that the applicant has withdrawn their petition, and that's really the purpose of my coming here, is to see if that is indeed the case or not. But if not, I just, on behalf of all three of the subdivisions, want to say, of the POAs, that we are adamantly against that, and on a number of different reasons, and would like to, if we could, more formally approach that at the appropriate time.
If we have questions, we'll call someone forward, but if you have a public statement to make, you should make it now.
Other than we think that location is not necessary. We believe that property is not permitted in the town limits, so they're trying to apply for an annexation, which we're adamantly against for that purpose. We love businesses, and we love tax revenue to lighten the burden of ourselves, but we're very concerned about this particular business as a not only a traffic hindrance to us who are pulling out, but just from the location of the type of business, how close it is to our homes. All right. Thank you.
Is there anyone else for public comment?
Good afternoon. John Nelson, 623 Leisure Lane. Follow on Mr. Horn. I'm the HOA president vice president for Hidden Cove. And playing along, I was here for the zoning meeting last 2 weeks ago, I think it was. We have extreme concerns about the type of business. We are all pro-business, but the type of business that's going to cater to more traffic, more trucks, more accidents, more congestion. As it is now, pre-COVID, there are times of the day that we cannot get out of our subdivision. That is due to the trucks, that's due to the traffic. For over 2 years, we've been working with the State Ports Authority, the mayor, Senator Grooms, on how to improve traffic, how to improve flow. And this would damage all of that. The State Ports Authority, I feel, would also be against this idea, because we would need a traffic light for this traffic, and the Ports Authority is completely against putting a traffic light at Shipping Lane in Hidden Cove. So I think there's a lot to be looked at for this issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else for public comment? Please let it be cleaned in between.
Good afternoon. George Freeman, 1450 Bowman Road, Director of Community Activity for CAGE. My understanding is that there's a request to defer this project again. We are completely against that, and we would prefer that this project be denied, be recommended for denial to council. And although we're against this project, something occurred to us that this is an opportunity that, with, I believe the town has a workforce committee or affordable housing committee, and we have an East Cooper Land Trust. This would be a good project for them to work at to see if it probably could be saved as either a conservation easement or purchase to keep these affordable houses in the town of Mount Pleasant. We're always talking about trying to provide affordable housing in Mount Pleasant. This is a chance for the town to try to keep affordable housing in the town. It also came to our attention that it seems strange that the town, as far as we understand it, do not allow mobile homes in the town of Mount Pleasant. So it's hard to see an annexation of mobile homes when it's non-conforming in the town of Mount Pleasant, especially since they're requesting not to be in the overlay district. And the only reason they're existing now is because they're in the overlay district. And I still believe it's not a conforming even in the overlay district. The only reason it's there is because trailers are allowed in the overlay district. But as I stated earlier, our main thing is that you recommend denial for this project. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to each of you. My name is John Wright. I live at 145 Rose Lane in the mighty Mount P. I serve as president of the African American Historic Settlement Commission. And on recently, George and the Cage community came to us, the commission, in an effort to for a joint collaboration to look at the item 4A and B on your agenda today. And we went physically out to the site to take a look at to see what was going on there, to get a general idea as to how we could help them advocate for what they were for and what, you know, they may have been against. Ultimately, the annexation is, you know, not so much, as they clearly told us, was not so much the issue, but the rezoning was. And we'd like to make sure that, you know, we know years ago, that overlay zoning for the Streetgrass Basket was done. Ultimately, what should have been done then and may not have been done then, but we can reinforce it now. I think we can. And that is to add a community benefit agreement, a legal component to that overlay, Streetgrass Basket overlay district. That legal component will, at that point, not allow these developers or these issues to continue to come before you. It will then have some legal precedence, and there will not be, at that point, staff work, your work, as council members transition blindly without knowing exactly what was in place. So I think this is an opportunity to reinforce that that Streetgrass Basket overlay zoning with the legal component that to eliminate developers from, you know, have an opportunity to come back before you. So as president of the African American Historic Commission, that is what we would like to see happen, as well as we support the Cage community and the and for what they would like to see as customary for their way of life and what has been established for a very long time now as it relates to how that zoning should be done. So I want to thank you all, and I really would like for you to consider some form of reinforcement so that that Streetgrass Basket overlay district can never be, no one can continue to come before you with it. Let's just get a legal component tied to it. Thank you.
Your time. All right, is there anyone else here for public comment? Anyone? All right, moving on to the next item on the agenda. This is items 4A. Are we taking A and B together, or did they request deferral?
So, yeah, we were notified this morning that they would like another deferral, preferably to next month. And this was at the request of the Watts family, while they continue to work with the homeowners and reach out to them. And so.
Right. Madam Chairman, can I ask a question?
Sure.
About this deferral? How many deferrals are allowed on an item before they have to wait a year to come back?
We might need legal to weigh in. I don't know if there's a max on the number of deferrals, but I know that they have 6 months from the time Planning Commission makes their recommendation.
That's correct. There's no, it doesn't address deferrals, because the 6 months maximum.
In other words, if they are, they could defer 6 times and still come the sixth time, or 5 times and still come the 6 times. I think that is very ingenuine for the neighborhood to have to come back here, or the people who are part of this to come back. And I wouldn't mind trying to suggest that this property be rezoned for, and I know it's not in the town yet, but to suggest that it be rezoned to allow for the mobile homes as well as for housing for the workforce housing, because I think that's what's there today. And it would be great to have it come in as workforce housing, and maybe they continue to pay rent to the owners or something like that. But it would be, there's some really nice people that live in there, and I think it's in genuine to have this thing continue to be deferred. But I'm going to vote for deferral for one more time.
Go ahead.
I just was going to say, typically, we would have not put it back on the agenda until they requested, and they did request, but so that's why it was put back on. So it will not be put back on necessarily next month unless they request it be placed next month. That makes sense.
Okay.
So they wouldn't necessarily have to come back. I'm comfortable with deferring it one more time, but I think I agree with you, Mr. Chapman, that a continued deferral and it reappearing on the agenda is not great for the folks who live there.
Right.
Do I have a motion?
I'll move for deferral.
Second.
We have a second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
I'm sorry, who seconded?
Ms. Corley.
Thank you.
And this is deferrals of item A and B.
Right.
The annexation and the rezoning. Moving on to item 5A, should we take A and B together, or is that?
So, Madam Chairman, I actually had a discussion with the applicant's consultant, and I think before I get into my long-winded staff report, they may want to request a deferral. They were required by DOT to do a traffic impact study. They recently completed that, and there's still some review kind of going back and forth. And so I'll let the applicant to talk to you about that. But I think they would like to request that before I get into the report.
Okay, so the applicant's here, correct?
Good afternoon. My name is Jonathan Woker. I'm a planner with McBride-Dale Clarion representing Speedway on this application. I also have David Daffron here with the Speedway Construction Management. We did speak with Ms. Reed before this meeting. We would like to ask that the committee defer this application for a couple reasons. We were not able to attend the Planning Commission meeting in person on August 19th, and they had a difficult time hearing us, and we had a difficult time hearing them. We attempted to do an online presentation. It didn't work very well, frankly, and so we think our information was not well presented, and I apologize for that to the town. But we are fully committed to this project, and because the traffic study is currently underway, and because it appears that traffic concerns are a significant part of what's being discussed with this land use, we would ask that the committee defer this as we work with both the state and your town staff. We have a traffic engineer engaged, and he's made findings that recommend a traffic signal there, but we would like to, you know, get that further resolved and come back to you at some point when your staff and our team have some ability to do that. I would like to say that, you know, we feel that the land use is appropriate, that it's the correct zoning, you know, the property zone industrial now in the county, and that we are asking for light industrial zoning. The annexation is because we would need sanitary sewer services, which are available across the street. But without going into a big presentation, we do feel that the use is consistent with your future land use plan and would be complementary to the existing uses and what's happening. We are not asking for withdrawal, just to clarify what was mentioned during public comments, but we are asking for a deferral to mm-hmm. allow us to continue to work with the town on this.
Thank you so much. Do I have a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Okay.
I'll make a motion. We defer.
Okay.
Second.
We have a motion to defer in a second. This is items 5A and B, an annexation and rezoning on Long Point Road. Any discussion?
Yes, ma'am. My question is, you said your traffic engineer is recommending a traffic signal. Is that correct?
Yes, sir, that's what I...
Have you all talked to State Ports Authority?
We have not, and that's, I think, part of what we're learning, that we need to get involved with that.
Well, I know you do, because when the State Ports Authority put their new office in, I felt that that was important as well on that particular intersection, but they were totally against it. So you're going to really need to pull out all stops if you can, because I think a traffic signal might help your case with the neighborhood as well.
Well, and thanks, sir, and hopefully the town can help us facilitate that as well. And we intend to follow whatever procedures, but, you know, we have submitted our study to the state. They've actually emailed us brief comments today, and we want to keep working on that.
Okay, good, thank you. That's all I have.
All right, any other further questions? Any further discussion? All those in favor of deferral, say aye.
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 Motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Moving on to item 5C, rezoning case Old Georgetown Road.
This one is not deferred. This is a petition to remove an approximately .23-acre tract of land from the Coleman Boulevard Overlay District and instead place it in the Chuck Dolly Boulevard Overlay District. The underlying zoning is AB, and that is proposed to remain the same. So you can see from the aerial, it's right at the, where Chuck Dolly intersects with Coleman Boulevard. So this is our future land use map, and as you can see, the property with the star is the subject parcel. It is a dental office. The future land use map does call for the Boulevard Overlay District for this area. And as you can see, the property adjacent to it here is currently in the county, but it is recommended for the overlay as well, presumably the Chuck Dolly Boulevard Overlay District. So this is our future land use map. And here's the current zoning, so that's the AB, and again, this is in the Coleman Boulevard Overlay District. So the property owner met with our DRB staff. They wanted to do some landscaping improvements and side improvements, and they found out pretty quickly that the Coleman Boulevard Overlay District would prohibit them from being able to do those. And who they met with was Peter Stone, and he actually mentioned, you know, they may want to consider coming in and being removed from the Coleman Boulevard into the Chuck Dolly Boulevard, because they do have some different requirements. The Coleman Boulevard promotes connecting pedestrian zones to one another. And the Coleman Boulevard is specific to those properties along Coleman. It's about the street presence and the ability to engage the public realm, as you would see along Coleman Boulevard. So this property is along along Old Georgetown Road on Chuck Dolly. And so it doesn't really fit the same requirements that we would want for the Coleman Boulevard Overlay District. The Chuck Dolly Boulevard Overlay District also only requires, one of the biggest issues is the activity zone requirement. And the Chuck Dolly Boulevard Overlay expressly prohibits the activity zone on all these side streets, so it wouldn't be required here. So essentially, staff believes it, both DRB and planning staff believes it makes sense, because this parcel does not have frontage along Coleman Boulevard, that it be moved to the Chuck Dolly Boulevard Overlay District. And you can see here, this is our overlay map. So the property in question is right here. And the reason this is not shown in blue is because it's recommended for the overlay, but it's not been annexed in. Once it is annexed in, it would be green, and here's proposed. So you would have these two, which front Old Georgetown, to be part of the Chuck Dolly Boulevard Overlay District. And this simple change would allow them to do very similar improvements. So you can see the property here in question has nothing except its paving there. And what they would like to do is something similar to what's next door, the dermatology office. Now, granted, the dermatology office is in the county. It was improved in the county. They're not going to be able to do the exact same type of landscape plan, but they can do something very similar And so that's the request before you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
All right. Do you have any questions? No? Do we have a motion?
Move for approval.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
My only question is, it looks like they've got direct access off of BB Lane into 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 spaces. But in your picture of what's there today, they already have that. Is that correct?
So the property in question, yes, it does have access off BB Lane.
And then it's parking spaces that are, if you go back to that picture.
There you go.
Am I looking at cars parked
along
directly driving in from BB Lane and
yes.
backing into BB Lane? Is that correct?
Yes.
So that's what they've got today?
Yes.
Okay,
this
thank
is the
you.
Existing plan.
That's my only question.
Mm-hmm. All right. There's no further discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No. Motion passes. Moving on to item 5D, rezoning for Coleman Boulevard.
All right, this petition is to rezone approximately 14 plus acres on Coleman, which is Moultrie Middle School. This came up, as you recall, several months ago. Staff was asked to review the Charleston County Public Schools and their respective zoning districts. I think it was at the January Planning Committee meeting. And it came up specifically for where could communication towers be located. And so staff went through pretty extensive research with this committee, talking about all of our school sidings, what they're zoned. And this is what we came up with at the committee meeting. And as you'll see, most of them are residential zoning or to plan development. We do have a couple that are public institutional, but Moultrie Middle was the only school that is zoned AB, Area-Wide Business District. And the AB zoning district does allow, through a special exception to the Board of Zoning Appeals, a commercial communications facility. And so at the direction of town council, staff initiated this zoning request to rezone the school facility to PI1, which is not only an appropriate zoning request for a school facility, but also would prohibit the location of a commercial communications facility.
And I know that we notified the school district of this, and we were kind of seeing if they would respond, and as I understood it, we never received a response from them in any direction.
No, ma'am.
Okay.
We didn't.
Thank you. Do we have a motion?
I'll move to approve.
All right. Do we have a second?
Second.
You have a second? Motion and a second. Any discussion? Any questions? No? All those in favor?
Aye.
No, none opposed? Motion passes. Moving on to item 5E. This is a proposal to amend the zoning code.
Okay, this is a text amendment to our temporary use ordinance. And this has been, really it kind of came about at the beginning of COVID. We started, you know, when you started to see the shutdown of theaters and places like that where folks would gather for different social things, we started getting requests for particularly a drive-in movie theater. But we've gotten a variety of different requests for what we kind of thought, well, they're not really temporary uses per our current ordinance. They're sort of semi-permanent temporary uses. They're not necessarily the highest and best use to this property. But given the circumstances that we're in now and trying to further economic development and provide these opportunities for different businesses where for movies where folks can't gather, this would be an opportunity. And so we took this to the Planning Commission. We at first were directed by the Planning Commission to kind of utilize our current special events permit, but really didn't address some of the things that were coming up. And we felt like we overall should just revamp our temporary use permit. It would be better addressed through the zoning ordinance. And so that's what this is before you. And the first couple of amendments, portions of the amendments, are really just things we needed to clean up anyway. For instance, we were very specific when we talked about seasonal items. We said Christmas trees. Well, there's other seasons and there's other things for temporary uses like pumpkins and you know, whatever, you know, Halloween type stuff. And so we made things a little more not necessarily flexible, but giving the zoning administrator more discretion in what is considered seasonal. We also got rid of specific zoning districts and made it a commercial instead of calling out AB, AB2, OP, NC, and those. So we just said any commercial district. We also added a clause that said, which may be renewed upon showing of good cause. This happens a lot. We have a temporary use permit for a, say, a trailer for construction going on, and they're going to be delayed another month. And so if they can prove to us that there's just cause and our zoning administrator has the ability to allow them another month or two to renew the temporary use permit. And then the duration of a portable storage unit, we addressed that. But the main part was this sort of temporary uses on a semi-permanent basis. And that's kind of a mouthful. But really what we wanted to address was these uses like a like the drive-in movie theater, where we know it's not permanent. We don't necessarily want it to go to DRB and get paved parking and install landscaping. And it's not necessarily going to be a brick and mortar. It's going to be this blow-up movie screen. But yet we wanted to be able to address concerns like traffic, noise, light, anything like that. And so that's what we feel like this does do. I think one thing that came up in Planning Commission that we do need to specify is that early, I think it's here in part B, it specifies that these are good for a year, and we didn't specify that this particular section would be good for a year. Planning Commission, I think, did have a little bit of heartburn with that year. They wanted us to look at perhaps seeing how it goes. Maybe it's more like 6 months, or maybe we have a mechanism for if we get complaints, we can address them and perhaps revoke that temporary use permit. So that may be something that we want to consider, but for the most part, I think we addressed everything that we needed to in this temporary use permit to allow those things that perhaps we haven't seen in the past. And I'm happy to answer your questions.
Right. Ms. Corley?
So if I understand correctly, you're trying to increase the number of permits and the length for which they can take a permit out for?
So right now, our temporary use permit allows portable storage units, construction trailers, and Christmas trees, fireworks. Think about July 4th and fireworks. It doesn't allow for somebody that wants to come in and say, okay, we have this huge parking lot that it's not being used because the business isn't operating. Mm-hmm. There's no business there. It's vacant. And the parking lot's not being used, and nobody can go into a theater, so why can't we have a drive-in movie theater? And how long do we want to do this? And how many cars can we accommodate? And so there's really not any mechanism for permitting something like that. We've also had some interest in from schools and churches wanting to put up temporary tent, pop-up tent structures, yep, to accommodate classroom size and still maintain social distancing and a safe environment for children. So these are some of the things that are kind of popping up during, you know, COVID-19 that we're having to really kind of amend our ordinances to address, you know, our current environment.
It's
and
not
so,
increasing, it's just creating.
Exactly.
Right. Okay.
Exactly.
I'm good. Do you have any other questions? And then you had mentioned that you wanted to maybe amend it a little bit to include an opportunity to revoke these if it becomes problematic.
Yeah.
Or at least specify the lifespan of that, this new temporary special semi-permanent use.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I feel like it's so hard to tell how long this COVID-19 period right. is going to last. You know,
90 days.
I don't know. I mean, until we get a vaccine and everything like that. Is it detrimental to us to not put a time limit in there, and we can address it when the crisis is over, we can come in and remove this?
So absolutely. But so the ordinance, the way it's drafted, it says this is an annual permit, and it's we could renew it. So it kind of leaves us open in that respect because we don't know how long it's going to last. The concern of some of our Planning Commission members was that if we give a one-year temporary use permit and month three or month two, we have complaints that that there's too much noise, or there's too much, you know what I'm saying, or there's an issue, and the law enforcement's being called. Their concern was that how do we pull that permit from them? And so that was something I think that we needed to kind of just to bring up to you all to get your input on that.
I think that would be a good thing to add in there if it becomes problematic, to have a way to claw that back.
Okay.
But could it be like it's
Ms. Corliff, I need your microphone on. Thank you.
Okay. Could it be that we make it a number of days and then we have to readdress it at that point? Because if it becomes a problem, yeah, just adding something into that says if we get called out there, you know, we can revoke that.
So perhaps it's instead of a 1 year, it's 3 months. And then at 3 months, if everything's good, we renew it.
You could reissue it.
Yeah.
So 3 month intervals.
If you behave well.
Yeah. Yeah.
You could do an automatic renewal period.
We could.
Say a year. Within that year, notice for renewal every 3 months, or just every 3 months or 2 months, whatever the committee and council believe. Anyway.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I think when this came up previously, I had the same question. If it's a problem, how do we pull it if we're permitting it for a year? 3 months with renewals maybe makes sense.
I think
isn't that a thing with liquor licenses, like Sundays or something? You have to re-up very often, so maybe it could be that kind of a thing where you have to just reapply.
Okay. Mr. Chapman, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I'm just looking at item A. It says each permit for an open lot sale in any commercial district shall not exceed 45 days. Am I missing something, or is that too specific?
That's specific to letter A.
Okay.
Yeah, which is the seasonal items. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm for 6 months. I'm not sure I want to go much beyond 6 months. One of my concerns is, while it says any commercial district, you don't know the proximity of that commercial district to a residential area. So I don't want to have it extended too long if it could be impacting a residential neighborhood because of proximity to that neighborhood. I mean, we've already heard from my neighborhood tonight or this afternoon. So I'd like to say 6 months instead of a year, and then maybe
I think 6 months is too long.
Relook at it.
Yeah. I think I'm more in favor of the 3 months.
You like 3 months better?
Yeah.
I'll go with 3 months. That's why I was looking at 45 days up here.
How about we do as David mentioned, and we say every 3 months it's an automatic renewal, but at that 3 month, if we've gotten complaints, we have the ability to not renew it.
That sounds great.
Okay.
All right. Do we need a motion on this? Do we need a recommendation to council? All right. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Okay. This is a recommendation to council with the amendment that we discussed.
Got it.
To limit it to 3 months with the clawback provision. Mm-hmm. All right, do we have a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
None opposed? Motion passes. Moving on to item number 6. This is discussion of the comprehensive plan related to residential uses in the redevelopment centers. I asked for this to be, well, we had this on the agenda coming back from full council because there had been some discussion on these five redevelopment centers and how residential uses could be in there since it's supposed to be these mixed-use centers. And there was discussion of this net-net, but problems with the administration of it, because how do you, you know, do you limit it by parcel? And then some of these development centers have no residential uses whatsoever. And so the staff came up with what I think is a good compromise position that I think will be palatable.
Yes, thank you. So yes, following the last council meeting, there were comments at the public hearing, and so we sort of separated this out. There are some text changes. One dealing with compatibility of new development within settlement communities, so we would recommend that be included. There was the idea of a supermajority vote of council to be able to amend the plan in the future, so new language is added into the draft that would reflect that, and it's an action item. It would need to be put in the zoning code, so we would continue to follow through on that. And then we had some comments, and we still, as a staff, have sort of housekeeping things that we need to clean up and making sure the language works. But we've made some changes based on that. But really, the crux of the issue is amount of residential which would be allowed in redevelopment centers. And originally, we had 5 centers that were designated as redevelopment because they all had another name before. And we switched to redevelopment. But the one at each end of town, Patriots and Carolina Park, really do not meet the definition of redevelopment. They're still emerging. So our suggestion is that we leave Patriots out and just refer to it as a waterfront gateway. We redesignate Carolina Park, even though it's fairly large, as a community scale hub. And that only leaves us then the 3 that we've mostly been talking about, Houston Northcutt, I-526, and Town Center. And our suggestion is that we would use a total allocation, like a bank or an allotment, where we would multiply the acreage of these areas times 2 and say that would be the total number of residential units allowed within these 3 individual redevelopment centers. And further, that the that housing be workforce and or senior housing at 30% of the total number. And so how we got there was an analysis that we did looking at all of our existing centers today that have a mix of commercial or retail, office, and residential. And you see some examples here. And Ms. Whitley made a note of the one, say, for instance, at I-526 or Town Center is the best example. It has no units, no residential within that area at all. So if you went with this notion of, well, they can't have any more than they already have, they wouldn't get any, and it wouldn't be fulfilling the plan objectives of adding residential and mixing up the uses. But as we went through all of this analysis, some of the numbers are even higher. Some of the areas are places like Seaside, where there are 4.7 dwellings per gross acre of that center that's designated, and folks seem to be okay with that kind of development. So we went with historical patterns in development, suggest that this shakes out at about 2 per acre. And so what would happen is in Houston Northcutt, the 210-acre area would be allowed an allotment of 420 total residential units. And then we did the calc for you in terms of 126 of those would be affordable. Likewise, redevelopment at the center at 526 is much larger, also includes acreage for highway and freeway interchanges and things, so the developable area isn't that big. But the total area of that would generate 824 total residential units, and 30% would be about 250 affordable. And Town Center is just under 100 acres, so that would generate 184 total, and 30% workforce would be 56. And so what we would suggest is, because there are a lot of questions now about, okay, now how do we divvy that up? How does it work? And so we would suggest that you put the language in designating this, and then we would add language to the plan that says that we would refine that and figure that out as part of doing special area plans for those 3 areas, and that the workforce housing is obviously included in that recommendation. And so the special area plans and subsequent zoning would be we would figure out the actual mechanism of distributing and allocating those residential units. Part of the reason we think that that would be okay is there are some things in play that you ought to take into account. On the regulatory side, we already have an apartment moratorium that still goes. We have a building permit allocation system, and I think we only have a dozen multifamily permits left. So nobody's going to be in a position under our current regulatory scheme to be able to come in and move quickly to be able to do this. That buys us some time to work on those area plans and the new zoning that would help us figure it out. And then one other consideration at the top is that a lot of these areas are zoned commercial in the overlay. The overlay already allows residential. So if you went to something like in the 526 area, you get no residential. The zoning already accounts for some residential. So then you'd have property owners would probably have somewhat of a concern being taken from an opportunity to have some mixed residential in a development to having zero. And the 30% number that we used for affordable dwellings was based on past town efforts and a pretty standard number that a lot of communities use if they're requiring or encouraging affordable housing. It's around that 25% mark. So that's what we have for you today, and happy to answer questions and or hope that you're ready to move this one forward.
Do you have any questions?
No, ma'am. I just think the planning department's had a yeoman's job to try to put together a compromise, and that's the way I look at this. This is a compromise. And as Mr. Alma said, there's some areas now that are well above this number that already exist, and we're trying to downsize the number of residential and also get workforce and senior housing in as part of it. And so I think they've done a great job, and I'm willing to support it.
Ms. Hyatt.
You ran some numbers on when we were talking net-net. We have how many units existing versus doing it this way? Have we added all those up? I didn't write them down fast enough.
When you in came this up center, with back in here, Harbor Point.
Yeah, there's 358.
358, and the two number goes up above that, so it about captures that. Mm-hmm. It was problematic for the other centers. The I-526 has 108 condos in it. So that would leave 108 for that geographic area if you didn't do something else. And then Town Center has zero in terms of existing sort of more multifamily or higher density development.
So with net-net, we're at what, 466 units? But then if we do two per acre, it's, what's the total acreage?
Oh,
will it be in
so you're adding it all up?
Yeah. So if we go, if we did net-net, we'd only be allowing like 466 units. But
it'd
if we do
184 plus 824, somebody help me, 1,000?
Something.
1,400.
But this is still 2 units per acre versus the 16 to 20 that's allowed under the overlay district. So
right.
It's a significant reduction.
Right. Okay. So I was just comparing the two, the numbers there. And how do, okay. All right. And there's not really a way of calculating the units. I mean, that's not by square footage or footprint or it's
no,
just units, whatever
works
out.
That's the point that we would get at. I mean, you really need to refine it and work it through, looking through with specific special plans for each of these areas. And then you can really start to hone in on exactly how you would do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Do I have a motion to recommend these changes to council?
I move that we submit this to council for approval.
Do you have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right, moving on to item 7 on the agenda. This is an update on the short-term rental program and discussion and possible action. I have been hearing from constituents just there was like a drug overdose in one of the short-term rentals. There's been multiple complaints. There's been no way to prevent a bad actor from getting a permit after the fact, even if they were running an illegal STR and had lots of complaints beforehand. And even the provisions in, and we talked about this in police, legal and judicial, even the provisions for punishment of violations, the way that those accumulate is very, very favorable to the owner of an STR. I also am interested in this update because when we discussed a cap on short-term rentals, we said 1%, but there was a big concern that that 1% would be concentrated in one area of town simply because of the lack of HOAs in, especially in the older parts of town. And when we saw the map at PGL, it's very much the case that the short-term rentals are incredibly concentrated in the old part of town, and we have not reached the cap yet. So, Mr. Alma, if you want to present to the committee on this.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We just laid out here for you sort of the sequence of events that's has occurred. I will say that some of the comments and some of the activity you heard were actually occurring before we ever had an ordinance. And so it's, these things are not necessarily sort of, the neighborhood conflicts have existed when we didn't have an ordinance, and they were considered an allowable use because the zoning code didn't say otherwise. So you've got a combination maybe of historical activity and then now under the new program, which started on January 1. But, you know, we went through a long process of adopting, preparing and adopting the ordinance. Then we moved into the staff stage of being able to set up a program to administer it. And we've been, now we're pretty much in these initial applications. We're still processing initial applications that we're getting and enforcing the requirements to get a permit. So we're not really at the level yet of responding to complaints about active short-term rentals that have been permitted under the code. There may be one, but some of the others, we're not at that stage yet to really be, you know, up and running on the ordinance. It was adopted last August. Effective date was delayed to give us time to get set up, and we did that. And these are some of the points that you brought out, is that about 1% would be a little over 400 total. You can't operate in a multifamily unit or a neighborhood that prohibits a short-term rental. You need a business license, and you need to pay us to process your application. We then moved to creating the program or the system, and we started advertising and publicizing that during last fall's time when we had the ability to do that. And then permits were ready to be submitted on January 1, 2020. And we have an online system, and applicants must provide, based on the ordinance, there are a number of requirements and all the basic information you expect about that use. And in addition, the ordinance requires other things like site plans, proof that they paid property taxes, business license, other tax payments. And so a lot of what it takes for our staff to administer this is chasing down that other kind of information. It's not just a land use question and issuing a permit. There's other information that we have to gather. So by the numbers, we've processed 325 total applications as of about the middle of last week. 276 STR permits have been approved and issued. And then there are some that are pending, others that have been denied because they didn't meet certain requirements, and others that, you know, pending or whatever, they or canceled. They may have just never followed through with anything or never got us the required information. And this is the mapping that we've done. This is a sort of a bird's eye view of the entire town. But then as you zoom in closer, say from IOP connector at the upper right corner back in, and then the older parts of town, which is what was expected. But it was also, these were also the areas that already had STRs up and running in them at the time the ordinance was prepared. So enforcement, and that was the question, well, what are we doing to enforce this ordinance? First step in enforcement is enforcing the permit requirement. And so what we've been able to do is work closely with our business license division, and they're able to hold off on issuing a business license and telling somebody, you can't get a business license to operate this business until you go get a permit, an appropriate permit from the planning department. And so that's kind of the setup and the system. And they were able to actually hold off on renewals in some cases to be able to force people to come and say, no, you need to go get this step one before you can get to step two. We do have software that was acquired in conjunction with the county. So the county and other jurisdictions have access to this, where we can monitor activity and identify locations. So when our staff sees that there are active listings at 1234 Ann Edwards Lane, then we have the ability then to put that on the list for notification, to be able to say you need to come into compliance and obtain that permit. And so we broke that down, and our first set of notice letters were those in the group that were like, they had been active in the past month. So we started there, and if they were a little older, we would get to those eventually. And then we had additional notices. So as of the 25th, staff sent out notifications to 257 total. 184 of those were the first notice, and then others were already into the second and third contact letters to try to get them to come into compliance. And of that first set of notification letters, the 184, 73% have responded and are proceeding, but you still have folks that aren't pursuing the permit. This was on first notice, though, so they may have done it after we send a second or even a third. And we still think at this point, some of the ones we're working on, we've got about 100 in play that we need to continue to bring under the ordinance in terms of obtaining a permit. Then we would move to the operational side, where you would, you know, be enforcing complaints. I have a valid, somebody has a valid permit, but now they have complaints, and we would be moving there. Obviously, we would continue to process new applications and new requests, but the big wave would be, have been accomplished, and we would now be into sort of a different operational mode. So our philosophy at the time when we started this up was that we wanted to make sure people complied and got the appropriate permit and then their business license. We did get some complaints about these activities while that was happening. We did issue one citation to a property that didn't have a permit, but we had received a number of complaints very quickly, right? And they were in the midst of actually submitting the proper paperwork. And since that time, they were did receive a permit, and the court case was dismissed. So now they're operating under an approved permit. We've had a lot of questions. Well, why didn't you issue violations or citations to people who didn't have a permit? It would have been everybody who was out there operating. I mean, on January 1, we could have issued hundreds of citations, and we didn't believe that was the way that you would start a new ordinance program. It was more, we were more in tune with getting people to comply, not just to issue citations. And so again, now we're moving to that enforcement of occupancy violations at permitted locations. And then if they're not permitted, then we follow other enforcement means to be able to work on you know, a use that's not approved. Under that system, there are mechanisms to enforce complaints, but a permittee has to receive a certain number of complaints about that property for certain kinds of activities. So we show you here noise, trash, or maybe exceeding capacity or the occupancy in a sort of in a rolling 1 year period. And the way the ordinance was written and the operators at the time were asking council, we don't want to have to be have our permit rescinded instantly. You know, we need time. You know, if we get 15 complaints one weekend, then we have no capability to remedy that or fix that. You know, we're cooked. And they asked for the ability to say, you know, can we have it where we get a violation per rental period? And so under our system, we would issue two warnings, then we can move to a citation of a penalty, and then ultimately we could initiate a revocation of that business license. And then the applicant still has to have the ability to respond. So they're able to come back and say, well, that did or didn't happen. And then there is one other administrative process where we can revoke a permit. The zoning administrator or a designee can also, in addition to the other violation piece and, you know, not letting somebody renew a business license, we can actually revoke the SDR permit as well. And it could be immediately revoked if we discover things like a building code violation. If the ordinance requires that if you're going to advertise, our permit number and our business license number on your advertisement has to be there. So if somebody is advertising and we can pick up on it in the system without those numbers, that is one that's subject for immediate revocation because they're not putting that permit information on their advertisement. And then, again, there's a legal requirements for appeals, so the Board of Zoning Appeals would be the body that would hear any appeal for a revocation. If the permit is revoked, then the property owner can't get a permit or a business license for a short-term rental for 1 year, and then they would have to reapply. We have a staff member who spends most of her time working on this, at least at this point, so you kind of get a sense of what it takes to administer a program like this. Lots of inquiries, lots of getting records and information pulled together, and we as a staff have identified some issues that we've run into and maybe a few lessons learned. And so in addition to any additional discussions, we already have sort of a collection of changes we would suggest move forward ultimately, because and in particular things like covenants and restrictions, where the we're in the position as a town of having to enforce private deed restrictions, and we're having to be the ones to judge whether or not those CCNRs limit this use or activity or not, and it puts us in an odd position that we have to be doing that. So we've already identified that. We've also identified a lot of structures have been converted to accessory dwelling units without permits for that. And so it opened up another piece. And we have no ADU permits left under our permit allocation system. So what do we do with those? So we've got a few of those that we would be packaging up and bringing forward through the committee and council in the future. And with that, that's where we stand on up and running and beginning that enforcement program.
Can you move back to the penalty slide where it notes the violations 1, 2, 3, and 4? Just to clarify for the committee, and please correct me if I'm wrong, these violations only occur for one particular rental contract period, in the sense that if I'm a bachelorette party and I've rented this house for a long weekend, and I get a complaint on Thursday, a complaint on Friday, and a complaint on Saturday for my three raucous nights of parties, that only counts as one violation. Okay. Then next weekend, it's a bachelor party, and they do the same thing. Every single night, there's a complaint. That counts as a second violation, second warning. And then the next weekend. So there's a lot of leeway here because there's no incentive to an STR owner to get rid of a violation, because it doesn't matter what the violation is, it only counts as one violation. Even if the people there, if it's 30 people there and they're partying all weekend, that's only one violation, even though there may be multiple complaints from neighbors. It's not like a clear penalty. I think that there needs to be, you know, there needs to be some incentive for an STR owner to take care of a problem, not just accept that they're going to have just one violation for an entire weekend of disrupting the neighborhood. Ms. Hyatt?
A ticket could be given for like a noise ordinance or littering or whatever the complaint is. That could be
other enforcement mechanisms, yeah, might work, but in terms of the permit,
right,
itself, those violations to be tracked against the approved, mm-hmm, permit have to follow, right, this particular procedure.
But as far as
they probably would be one and the same. I mean, a noise complaint would, mm-hmm, be one, but it would only be the one for that rental period.
But I'm just thinking it might help rein it in. If you're saying they could be horrible on Thursday and Friday and Saturday because it's only one violation, that maybe, you know, tickets being issued or something might calm them down.
They are.
Yeah.
I think that they are, but they're not as significant.
That would help restrain them.
But I think that having it be more of a more than one violation in a weekend would put some pressure on STR owners to be present at their space and make sure that people are following it.
Be daily.
Yeah, because,
right,
it could be.
Because you have to give them time to fix it, I think.
Yeah, I think each day there should. I agree with you, Ms. Corley. I think each day could potentially be a violation.
Because how soon do they know? So an STR owner should know if you get a complaint, the cops get called to your place, you'll know because you're the property owner, right? So that gives you.
They may or may not.
May not.
They're there visiting. That's the other part of that quick turnaround. I mean, from a zoning side, we don't have officers in a vehicle that is out responding at midnight. And so, I mean, it takes time for, police would have to let us know. We were there over the weekend, and we would have to be in the position of, I mean, it takes time for us to issue the warning. We can't issue these kinds of instant warnings at the time. Mm-hmm. Police would issue a warning, and we would count it, or a visit, and they would let us know. And now we're trying to develop those mechanisms for us to work, and also for litter or trash and other things. If public services gets a complaint call, then that will be funneled into our system, and that will be used as one of the violations that can occur. But again, it could be noise, it could be litter, it could be loud activity or whatever, all occurring, and then during that rental period would be one violation. And that, again, that was at the request of the operators at the time the ordinance was being drafted, saying, well, we want to make sure that there are legitimate complaints about our activity, not sort of,
well, I feel like
constant complaints.
Responsible STR owners have agreements in their contract of, like, you cannot throw large parties here, you cannot exceed the number of things here, to where if they're a responsible STR owner and that kind of thing happens on their property, they're shutting it down right away, they're getting rid of it right away. But if you're an irresponsible STR owner, an absentee one, and you're permitting this kind of thing to occur, you know, I think that's problematic. I think with the covenants, so many of the older neighborhoods, their covenants date back to a time when STRs didn't exist. So you could say no businesses are allowed here, but, you know, long-term rentals are not considered a business. So we had this big discussion during planning when we were talking about STRs as a business, is what makes short-term rentals a business and long-term rentals not a business? And how do you distinguish between those to permit one and not the other with older covenants? I know that some HOAs have talked about coming together and actually amending their covenants to be specific about it. So that's something that an HOA could do. Mm-hmm. The other issue that I think we need to talk about is the parking requirement, because right now I think it's limited to one space per STR. And before, we had talked about it being one space per bedroom, or maybe two spaces, just something a little bit more of a requirement, because right now we've been getting complaints of, you know, six cars at one STR, which I think is problematic. And then I still think this 1%, this concentration of all the STRs on the south side of town, is not, just simply because of HOAs, is creating a disruption in the character of the neighborhoods on that side of town. And I don't know how we can best address that. So those are things I think we need to discuss.
I had mentioned in our meeting earlier when this came up about, if there was a way to limit permits, like per square mile or something, that might be the only way to keep them from being so concentrated.
And we had talked about that, because there's one STR ordinance, I think in Colorado or Arizona, where it was like limited to an STR per block or something like that. But there were problems with that as well, about the legality of doing that. So I don't know if that's
something. It was explored, yeah, limitations like that. Other ordinances talk about like a geographic area. So they might say in this particular neighborhood, or they might map it off, we're only going to issue this many in this geographic area. But we looked at some of those things, but the option was to go in this direction instead, or the choice.
Or just grid, you know, just grid the town and say this many per, so that you're not like spot zoning.
How do you decide who gets a permit? Is it first?
Well,
first come, first come, first serve.
We do it this way already by limiting how many for the whole town.
Right. So just
so I don't see why we can't, if it's legal to limit it for the whole town, why is it not legal to limit it per neighborhood or area? It seems like the same rule would apply.
With the residents that were here speaking during public comments, so their townhouse, their HOA said, no, you can have short-term rentals. Is
their
that what's happening?
Covenants that we looked at, I believe in one of those, said, you know, the general language of, you can't be used for a business purpose. And at the time, it was probably meant a retail or commercial activity. We did not issue a permit. And then the property owner and went to the homeowners association, the board and attorney, and they wrote back to us and said, no, the covenants don't limit the STRs. It's not considered. So then we did issue the permit in that particular case. But then again, we're the arbiters of what a homeowners association wants or needs in their covenants, and one of the recommendations we have is that somebody just needs to sign an affidavit that says, my homeowners association allows these, or doesn't, you know, and that then we would issue a permit based on that. If it's issued against those covenants, then that's a private matter that they have to figure out and deal with. But our public permit is still valid until we find out otherwise.
I like that, because that does seem a little confusing, because they even have an HOA and that didn't protect them.
So basically, your explanation is it's not really the town's responsibility to keep up with HOA rules that they need to. Okay. So in their this neighborhood situation, if they don't allow business licenses, then they would have to address that civilly with the people operating these businesses.
Yes.
Rather than the town having to. I mean, it would be.
There are statutory requirements about disclosures for other things that we are supposed to get evidence that if somebody's coming in for a rezoning, for instance, or a development, they need to show us that they're able to do that and that we're not stepping across or contradicting the private deed restrictions. That's easier when you're dealing with a couple of rezonings a month, but not when you're dealing with hundreds of these.
Yeah.
So covenants are all supposed to be privately enforced. The town is not in a position to be sorting those out.
So this issue is going to be on the PJL committee meeting next month as well, but I think it could potentially should still be on our committee to discuss some more, maybe some of these issues with the parking and with the 1% and that kind of thing. Because, I mean, it's been... It started in January. We're coming up on a year on this ordinance and really, I think, having an understanding of where it's going and how it's been received in the town. I think that's something that we can take a look at about maybe potentially amending the ordinance. And I think one of the big things is this complaint enforcement seems so lenient and really disfavors the neighborhood of the people that live in the neighborhood. One of the things that was brought up by one of the public comments was saying that calling the police and police saying their hands were tied. Is that, if people call for a violation, then someone should come out. Isn't that correct? They wouldn't say, well, it's an STR. They can.
No, they would respond. They would respond to any of those kinds of complaints.
We have no issue responding to a property and providing, if there are citations to be written for behavior, and the officer is well-founded and well-rooted in writing that citation, he or she is going to do it. We have no issue with that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Great. Thank you. Ms. Hyatt?
Yeah. I wasn't on council, of course, when this was written, and I think I always said that we shouldn't have a more lenient rule than, like, our neighboring towns, like Charleston. Sullivan's Island doesn't even allow these, really, but I believe the city of Charleston, you have to live on the property. And they require like 2 parking spaces per 3 bedrooms. So, you know, there are ways to deal. So if it's a 6 bedroom house, they should have at least 4.
Mm.
Or at least having 2, you know, we should address the parking situation. But the way the city does it is like 2 per 3 rather than 1 to 1 or just a blanket of just 1 spot, because a lot of people, everybody brings their own car and they're everywhere. So there are some tweaks here. I think now that you say we've had it a year, we know what's going on.
Well, I'd like the idea of restricting a certain number of short-term rentals per neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
This idea of having, you know, 15 in one neighborhood is not good. I also wonder, for that house that had 40 people, that's got to be a building code violation, because in a residential neighborhood, I think the number is 4. You can't have more than 4 non-related individuals in the same house. Is that not correct?
Police would respond to that piece if it's a safety issue or whatever in terms of the building code. Our building inspectors aren't out there at that Saturday night at midnight. And
right.
So we have to then follow up and deal with it the next week.
But
it's happened.
But wouldn't that be a code violation? A building code violation?
And that would be an automatic, or that would trigger the vacation?
If they're staying, it'd be an issue of are they staying, or are they just there for a party, and then they're not all staying, and, you know, so we have to sort those kinds of things out.
Right. Okay. Well, that would be my two cents with it. I like the parking thing where you have to have a certain number of parking spaces
per bedroom
on the premises for a number of bedrooms, not just one, but one or two to start with in any house. And then depending on the number of bedrooms, you need to have on your premises a certain number of parking spaces.
And that, I like all of it, especially the consequences for misbehavior or not aligning to the rules, and the parking and the affidavits. All great, great points.
So do you think maybe for next month, staff could come back with some suggestions or of amendments to the ordinance?
We could come back with information sort of in those categories that you talked about.
Yeah.
And maybe additional information on what others are doing and or other complaints we get. I mean, honestly, if we've got a couple hundred out there and we're not getting that many complaints. So the other thing we would not want people to do is, you know, say something so that we know what exactly is happening. A lot of it seems anecdotal. We're not necessarily getting those complaints coming to us, at least yet, but it's still early in a program.
Is there a, I know that there's an STR site on our website for people to apply for permits. Is there an opportunity there for someone to register a complaint? Because I think that some of these complaints are coming, you know, it's like a phone call to the mayor. It's an email to me. It's not necessarily coming to the planning department to where you're aware of the magnitude or the scope of like what's going on.
We could add a specific email address. We have a general one. If anybody wants to write to us, it's planning@tompsc.com. So they can always get to us with general information, but we have one for trees. So maybe one for STRs.
I don't know if it needs to be specific to STRs, but just I think making the public aware, I'm writing it down, making the public aware that if they have a complaint about an STR, how they register that complaint and who to contact.
Yep. And our staff is in contact with people who do call about it.
I have one other question. Do we charge like a hospitality tax? Or I know we have the permitting and business license, but does the town make any tax money off of these? It's like a hospitality tax?
Yeah,
okay, I wasn't sure what that was.
You got to pay accommodations tax.
Yeah. Accommodations.
Well, do we have anything further to discuss on this? Any other comments?
No, ma'am.
Okay, that's item number 7. The last item on our agenda is to adjourn. There's nothing more to come before us. We are adjourned.